Welcome to the latest edition of the Sight Screen Cricket Journal podcast. I'm your host, Tohid Qureshi, and today I've got another fantastic guest joining us to talk about the recently concluded Zimbabwe and Bangladesh series. It's my great pleasure to introduce the voice, I would say, of not only Zimbabwe cricket. He's done an awful lot of commentary, broadcasting, reporting from Bangladesh itself, and I'm hoping to actually sort of tease out some of his experiences of Bangladesh maybe later on. He is, of course, Mr. Tino Mawoyo. Welcome, Tino.
Thanks, Tohid. Thanks a lot. It's been a while since we've managed to catch up on the platform, but thanks a lot for having me, and then to the show.
No problem at all. It's great to have you on. I know how busy you've been over the sort of past weeks with the Bangladesh series, so really great to have you on. I guess, yeah, today let's just get straight into it. I wanted to kind of just tease out some of your thoughts in terms of an overview of the tour in general, and then maybe sort of pick out some of the individual matches and performances. I guess just as an overview, we were just talking off air there about just the fact that the whole tour went off without a hitch. And, you know, we know in these COVID times how difficult it is to actually stage a series in its entirety without any sort of postponements or cancellations, without any breaches of the bio bubble. So I feel that in itself was a success.
I'd have to agree. I think that's a wonderful achievement. And I think kudos to all that were working behind the scenes in terms of putting together the biosecure environment, ensuring that people are abiding by it. And Zimbabwe's actually had two tours, where Pakistan recently as well, where we've managed to stage the whole tour without any hiccups with that regard. So I think, very well done to all those behind the scenes. And I mean, we've seen around the world a couple of times in the last week that, you know, positive results are causing headaches and halts to matches and postponements. So it was good that that didn't happen on this last tour, and hopefully, you know, not just in Zimbabwe, around the world, that, you know, we can manage to just curb this pandemic and play as much cricket as we can.
Absolutely, totally agree with all of that. And like you say, I think, yeah, fantastic achievement for Zimbabwe cricket to get all the games on. Everything seemed to go really smoothly. You know, watching on TV anyway, everything seemed to go off without
anything. Always looks like on TV, I can tell you that.
But yeah, no, fantastic that it all went ahead. Results-wise, however, not so great for Zimbabwe. Obviously, across all formats, there were sort of seven matches played in total, I guess, Zimbabwe losing six of those, including the one test match, the three ODIs, and the two 20Is. Just your thoughts, I guess, just very generally in terms of where the two teams are, in terms of comparatively in their sort of overall progress and development.
Yeah, well, you mentioned those results. Disappointing from a Zimbabwean point of view, and I think in particular because it was a home tour playing in home conditions. Congratulations to Bangladesh, because I thought they played some pretty good and consistent cricket throughout the series. I think you look at the two sides at the moment, and Zimbabwe has been like that now for probably the last three or four tours. A lot lesser experienced in terms of game time, and not just at international level, but at domestic level as well, which is, and representative level, which is where you really make your cricketers. So, I mean, the drive from Zimbabwe has been to look to the youngsters going forward, qualification for the next World Cup, and an expectation that, you know, the older guard in the team will be making way in the next two or three years, maybe, or the majority of them anyway. So important that the youngsters are blooded. Looking from a terms of experience, Bangladesh way ahead in that department. But I look at the results and I look at the performance of some of the youngsters that are coming through, and I think Zimbabwe's got a good future to look forward to. So, of course, The captain, Sean Williams, Craig Irvin unavailable throughout the series, Sikander Raza not in the test match, and there was a lot of pressure on the shoulders of Brendan Taylor. And you could see that he scored consistently, but you know, he really had to be stand out in the two formats anyway, the ODI and the test match, for Zimbabwe to go forward. But I see numbers from, in particular, the younger batsmen coming through. Wesley Madebere has certainly made a spot for himself in the shorter format cricket. We saw a bit of Dion Myers coming into the side. And I mean, he didn't look out of place in international cricket. He hasn't got the big scores that you would expect. But as I say, I think if these youngsters just get a little bit more time domestically, representatively, then I reckon in a year and a half's time, 2 years' time, Zimbabwe will have a very competitive side. You can look at a young Garaba, I think, with the ball. Zarabani, of course, you know the quality that he possesses. So, yeah, a few youngsters coming through. Milton Shumba got an opportunity to open the batting in the test side. Caetano. So I think Zimbabwe just needs to brace themselves for a period of maybe 12 to 18 months where maybe results won't go their way. But I think the experience gained by the youngsters, especially with, you know, consecutive tours coming up, results will change for them.
Indeed. And I think that theme of kind of youngsters kind of stepping up was something actually that Bangladesh kind of learned, I think, from this tour. And one of the biggest kind of plus points and learning points for Bangladesh, particularly, like you say, in the shorter format games, in the ODIs and the T20Is, the likes of Afif Hussain, Nurul Hasan, the wicket keeper, and in the very last T20I, Shamim Hussain, the way that those guys stepped up, not only to sort of contribute, but actually make valuable contributions and actually get their team over the line and actually win games. So I think, yeah, from a Bangladesh point of view, that was possibly the sort of biggest takeaway. But yeah, just also for me, I guess it would, you know, as an outsider looking in, we don't get to see that much Zimbabwe cricket on sort of our screens in the UK. I did watch a bit of the Zimbabwe-Pakistan series, having said that. But it was the first time that I'd seen people like Mazarabani up close, and I was, you know, really impressed with some of the spells that he bowled in particular. But let's get into some of the actual games and try and sort of tease out what happened and why it happened. The first test, Bangladesh ended up winning in the end quite handsomely by 220 runs. But I do think that there were certain sort of windows of opportunity there for Zimbabwe. In the first innings, Bangladesh were about 100 odd for five before
132 for six at one stage.
Absolutely, exactly. And that was before, you know, their lower order really kind of piled on the runs. So Litton Das ended up scoring 95. Mamadilla, fantastic, 150 not out. And then Tuskin Ahmed, who can forget his duel with Mazarabani in particular. That was something that really lit up that first innings. But, yeah, those contributions got Bangladesh up to that really healthy first innings total of 468. In reply, Zimbabwe were looking good as well, actually, I thought, in their first innings. I think they were about 170 odd for three. But then, yeah, after I think Brendan Taylor's wicket, the rest of the batting kind of fell away quite significantly. So there was that quite considerable sort of first innings deficit. I think it was about 200 runs, just less than 200 runs, which Zimbabwe could, you know, never really recover. And I think actually in Bangladesh's second innings, that sort of demoralisation from facing such a big first innings deficit kind of told a little bit in the field as that innings wore on, Bangladesh declaring on 284 for one, and that was after centuries from Shadman and Shanta as well. And then, I thought Bangladesh, they actually had to be quite patient to bowl out Zimbabwe in that last innings. But I thought it was encouraging that, you know, the likes of Mehdi Miraj and obviously, you know, Shakib's always going to take wickets. But I thought it was encouraging for Miraj actually to to pick up those sort of last innings wickets, kind of having failed to do so, if you think back against that series against the West Indies, having failed to sort of pick up those last innings wickets there, and again, kind of against Sri Lanka as well, not doing so well. So in summary, I guess, yeah, I thought there was an awful lot happening in that test. I mean, one thing that, you know, all of Bangladesh were talking about, certainly, I think after that first innings by Bangladesh, was Mahmudullah's retirement. So the mid-match retirement, he goes in, scores 150 not out, and that's after being recalled to the test side after a considerable time, I think almost 2 years out of the squad. What did you make of it?
I'll come to an assessment of the game first before I come to Mahmudullah. I thought you mentioned two, I think, very important stages in the match. Bangladesh 130 for 6 in the first innings, and then ending up with 460. That's, from the Zimbabwean point of view, criminal. And it was a pitch that was tailor made for the seamers, and you saw that from the beginning of the test match. And once you get an opposition 130, you got to make sure that you finish them off quickly. And if they had managed to do that, batting would have been a lot easier for them. I mean, 250 was ideal after getting them 130 for 6. They didn't manage to do that. And you look at the batting. I think the batting there were 220 odd for 2 or for 3. Had they bowled Bangladesh out for 250 or a lot less than 460, Bangladesh probably would have started to pay a lot in their bowling innings, and Zimbabwe could have capitalized on that. So I think maybe that just touches on the slight experience of some of the players in the side, and not having the awareness of realizing where you are in the test match and what needs to be done. So Zimbabwe don't play a lot of test match cricket. The guys that are in the side, the younger guys that are coming through, are going to have to learn very quickly. But I thought that had Zimbabwe finished off Bangladesh in that first innings, they could have gone on to win that test match. And it's a trend that's happened over the last couple of tours. So Pakistan as well, there were a couple of test matches in that series. Prior to that, February, March in Abu Dhabi against Afghanistan, won the first test match, but the second test match, trying to save the game, batting second time around, which is always going to be tough. And you mentioned Mahedi Hassan, Shakib Al Hassan with the ball. Shakib's always good with the ball. But Mahedi had to be very patient to get his 5 wickets. You know, you're always just going to be chasing the ball if you don't get enough runs that first inning. So it's so important for Zimbabwe to realize that in the next test matches they'll play. I don't think that's until next year sometime. But it's just important for Zimbabwe to realize when they've got themselves into a match-winning position, because it wasn't just in the test match. It was along the way in the one-day internationals and in the T20s as well. So something that they really need to sit down and have a look at and have an awareness of where they are and what needs to be done at that time. Because in particular in the batting, very often they're in a good position and a couple of unnecessary strokes, not even, you know, guys necessarily being got out by the bowler, and suddenly, you know, 180 for 2 or for 3 turns into 210 for 6, and all the work that's been done leading up to that is thrown away. So, yeah, just something for them to think about. And then Mahmudullah, was I surprised? Probably surprised at the fact that the announcement maybe came during the game, but that the announcement came, maybe not so surprised. And I say that because he's played for a very long time. Of course, part of the Big Four with Shakib, with Mushfiq, with Tamim. And hadn't been selected really in the test side for a good 18 months. This opportunity came about, but, you know, he's in the side. He's somebody who normally batted 5, maybe lowest 6 in test match cricket. I think he batted 8 on this occasion. Yes, got 150. But really, if Tamim was fit, would he have been picked? And if Tamim's fit going forward, will he be picked? Probably not. And maybe that was just, you know, a realization for him to say, hey, listen, 50th test match, that's an achievement. 150, highest test score in a test match. Maybe this is an ideal time to bow out of that format. So when I saw that happen, that was my train of thought. And I thought, well, what a wonderful way to you know, to call it quits on a test career.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's interesting what you say about the team composition as well, because actually one of the big talking points going into the game was the fact that Bangladesh really only went in with kind of three frontline bowlers. Obviously, you've got Shakib there as the all-rounder who in effect is a frontline bowler and a frontline batsman. But yeah, they only went in with the three frontline bowlers, Miraz, Tuskin and Ebadot, which meant that they had this massive long kind of batting lineup, which actually in the end served them quite well. Although I'm always interested in you know, those sorts of lineups, because sometimes you could say because you've got that long batting lineup, you're almost expecting failure from some of the batsmen in the top order, and you're kind of relying on, you know, some of the people in the lower order, people like Litton, people like Mamadullah. But yeah, it's interesting what you say about how many chances Mamadullah might get in the team sort of going forward. I don't know. Yeah, from my point of view, I'd say there's still one or at least one or two batting spots maybe in that middle order still up for grabs. It's interesting at the sort of the top of the order. I think Shadman Islam probably cemented a place there in that top three as opener, potentially. Shantu as well, I think, is now, you know, I think another one who sort of divides opinion, certainly amongst Bangladesh supporters, but I think he's done enough with two test match centuries now to kind of justify his place in the team. But yeah, it'll be interesting, I think, if Mamadullah, you know, decides to go back on that decision, who knows? My instinct is, you know, certainly in South Asian cricket, there's no final retirement. I don't think I've ever come across a player who's retired and that is it. So yeah, I feel that there might be a bit more to this story going forward. We shall see.
Maybe. I just also very quickly wanted to mention, talking about Bangladesh going into the test match with three real frontline bowlers. But to me, when I sat back and I looked at it after the toss on day one and Bangladesh electing to bat on what was evidently green, and that's exactly why they were at one stage 130-odd for six wickets. I thought that they had a game plan, and I liked the bold decision from Mominal to bat first, because it was, as I said, it was definitely a seamer-friendly wicket on day one and going into day two. But going back to what you were talking about, three frontline bowlers, the two seamers, Tuskin, Ebadot, and then Miraj, of course, Shakib picked as a batter, but will do a lot more bowling and will take wickets. They knew that if we bat first, we've got two quality spinners to try and bowl Zimbabwe out at the end. So I like that from Bangladesh. I thought it was a bold decision to say, listen, guys, it's going to be tough batting first. And I'm pretty sure Bangladesh know every time they come to Zim and there's a test match, it's not going to be, you know, a surface that doesn't assist the seamers. Let's bat first. Let's deal with what we have to. But the manner in which we picked our team, we've got the arsenal with the spinners anyway on a pitch that'll be drying later on to try and bowl these guys out. So I thought that was, from a game planning point of view, very good.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting point you make there. I hadn't sort of thought about it in that way. And yeah, you know, there's been lots of criticism, I say, of Mominal's captaincy, and indeed, you know, Russell Domingo as coach. I think there's been a few whispers off the back of kind of recent test defeats against Sri Lanka and West Indies. So yeah, it's good to see sort of these bold decisions, as you say, kind of paying off. Let's hope they do so in the future as well. So let's turn attention then to the ODI series. So yeah, Bangladesh winning a clean sweep of all three ODIs. I guess, yeah, just looking very quickly, the first one I felt was, you know, Zimbabwe, in terms of batting, just didn't really show up. Bangladesh putting on a decent sort of first inning score, 276 for nine, and then Zimbabwe, yeah, just getting sort of blown away for 121 there. What interested me more were the second and third games, where actually Bangladesh were made to chase. They were chasing second, and actually, you know, successfully in both cases. In the second ODI, chasing 241, They got there with 3 wickets to spare in the last over. And then in particular, I was even more impressed by the last ODI where they were facing quite a stiff target of 299 to win, chasing. And again, getting there actually with 2 overs to spare, so quite comfortably in 5 wickets. And really, that was off the back of a Tumim century up front. But the thing in particular that I was more kind of excited about, and this alludes to something I was saying earlier, was the way that game was finished off by some of the youngsters in the team. So Noor Hassan, the wicketkeeper, coming in, hitting a quick fire, 45 or 39 balls. And then Afif Hussain also assisting him in that partnership with 26 or 17 balls. So for me, yeah, that was a real sort of solid chase in not, straightforward circumstances.
Yeah, I want to just go back to the second ODI where, with 240 on the board, where Zimbabwe had, in my opinion, looking at the day and how they'd gone about their batting, were easily 40 runs short. They almost took it down to the wire. Penultimate over, I think that win was in, and that's where I think the difference is between Zimbabwe and between the Bangladesh batsmen from the series. The Bangladesh batsmen batted longer; they batted through periods that the Zimbabwean batsmen didn't bat through. You look throughout the series, Zimbabwe didn't get 100, as opposed to however many Bangladesh got. And that's just been the difference in the batting, because somebody who bats a little bit longer and gets the support of, cameo knocks around him just makes it a lot easier to set up a total or to chase a total. Zimbabwe had 30s and 40s throughout the series, 50s and 60s. And it's just not enough at the moment with international cricket. And the test match was very seamer friendly early on. But if you look at the pitches for the one-day matches, you look at the pitches for the T20, some really high-scoring games, and some of them not getting the total on the board that they were supposed to just because they didn't bat properly. So that's definitely something that Zimbabwe, again, needs to look at. I thought towards the end of the series in the T20s, they started to address it. But, sometimes it's a case of one day, a couple of steps forward, and then a few more back. But for me, that is the biggest issue. And if I look at Zimbabwe maybe a year or so ago, I was more concerned about technical issues that need to be addressed from the batsman. I don't see that so much as the case. Of course, a batsman in a career will always have an issue here or there, or a period where they're struggling with, a particular delivery or a particular line. But I look at the batsman throughout the series, and I haven't seen anything glaring from the batters as technical issues. Guys are getting themselves to 30 to 40 and they're not converting those scores. So in my opinion, it's more something up there as opposed to something that's technical. So from that point of view, it's a good thing because you don't have to worry so much about technical issues. But the mind is what needs to be set right. And as I said earlier, just guys realizing where they're at and what they need to do. So okay, yes, I batted well for a period, but let me push on for another 3 or 4 or 5 overs, frustrate the Bangladesh bowlers and fielders a little bit longer, and then get an opportunity to push on a bit. I think if they can manage to do that, then they will be getting better totals, definitely batting first and making the chases easier for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing for me, well, I think you said it, was really just that bit more experience, that bit more nous in the Bangladesh. Well, in terms of the batting lineup in particular, like you said, that second ODI kind of revolved around Shakib's 96 not out. He scored in the end. Everyone else was kind of playing around him, even though it was kind of a middling total to achieve, and wickets were falling. You felt that, with Shakib and his experience in the middle, that Bangladesh were always on sort of safe ground. And then also, yeah, like you say, that third ODI as well, built around a Tumim century as well, which kind of gave everyone else the impetus to go on and win the game. But also something I wanted to touch on and yeah, agree with in terms of the pitch curator at the Harare Sports Club. I mean, I take my hat off to him, because like you say, all the pitches for the ODIs and the T20Is seemed to be absolute belters. You know, it was a case of, you know, there were really runs there to be had if you could kind of, you know, play yourself in, negate any early sort of movement, such as it was against the white ball. You know, you could really cash in as a batsman. So, yeah, very impressed with some of the pitch preparation that went on there.
Yeah, and I think also just, you know, to remember and take into consideration is the fact that, you know, in Zimbabwe it's the winter now, so grass doesn't grow as quickly as you'd like it to. The repair of what's been used and what's been played on doesn't happen so quickly. And, of course, with the advent of COVID, tours are very limited in terms of how many stadiums are used. So, I mean, at one stage the talk was to have, you know, the test match in Bulawayo and have the shorter stuff in Harare. But in the end, everything was there because just the travel, you know, increases the risk of people contracting. So we had a full tour here, 3 ODIs, 3 T20s, a test match in Harare. We had some South Africa A games prior to that, probably a couple of weeks before that. The full tour of Pakistan was here, 3 T20 internationals, 2 test matches. So, I mean, to try and keep the pitch as fresh and as good for international cricket as it was is a major effort from the curator and his groundsman. So kudos to them as well.
Indeed. I think he needs to have, well, there needs to be some collaboration, I feel, between him and the pitch curator at the Bongabondo National Stadium, because I think the amount of games that get played on that surface, it looks very tired at the best of times. So, yeah, please, any collaboration, I think, would be greatly received. So let's move on then to the T20Is, which I felt was the format where Zimbabwe were the most competitive or showed the most amount of kind of fight, really. So, yeah, the first T20I, having said that, yeah, Bangladesh won. It was a kind of a lowish total by Zimbabwe, 152 they put on. Bangladesh got to their target quite comfortably, only 2 wickets down. But then the second T20I, Zimbabwe managed to achieve that win. And I'm sure that must have been like a real sort of confidence boost to the team, being on the, having, you know, previously lost, what, 5 matches in a row in the series in its entirety. So I'm sure that must have been a real kind of confidence boost. And, yeah, I suppose the match was won off the back of, well, I'd say quite an impressive bowling display, bowling Bangladesh out for 143 when they were chasing 167 to win earlier in that Zimbabwe innings. Fantastic knock of 73 off just 57 balls by Wesley Madivere opening the innings. So, yeah, I thought all in all, yeah, a really good display.
Yes, I think if you look at Zimbabwe of late, the better performances have been coming in the T20s, which is surprising because Zimbabwe doesn't play a lot of T20s compared to other nations anyway. I felt that if you look at that last match, Zimbabwe threw away an opportunity to win the series. I thought 194, yes, on a good batting surface, was very defendable. And there are a couple of things that that you can look at maybe from a captaincy point of view that you could consider maybe would have happened better. Of course, hindsight is always a lot easier for a person like me to deal with because I wasn't on the field of play. But again, just that awareness, I think, on the field of play from the leader is also quite important. But yeah, I'm very impressed with Wesley Madivere, who, interestingly, I asked him, I think, in an interview for the third ODI or something, where he preferred to bat because he's batted opening the batting in the T20s and he's got some good numbers. One day format, he's scored the majority of his runs batting 5 and 6, a good average, 30-35 odd for, you know, maybe 12 or 13 matches he's played put together. So, you know, I was just posing the question to him, you know, where he prefers to bat, and he said, well, you know, at the moment, you know, wherever I'm asked to bat, I'm happy to be wearing Zimbabwean colours and do the job that I need to do. But again, I thought he was very mature about how he went about opening the innings in the T20s, giving Zimbabwe a good start. And the elevation of a rejuvenated Regis Chakabwa, I think, also was fantastic for Zimbabwe. So, again, you'll see maybe sometimes how he got out, not just batting a little bit longer, but again, young and experienced, and I just see him going from strength to strength. So, over the moon for Regis Chakabwa, who's come in, and not just in the shorter stuff. Good 80 in the one-day series as well. He got some good scores in the test matches, batting up the order. So, look, I just hope that going forward, you know, those issues Zimbabwe has had with decent starts at times and then a cluster of wickets that really just, kills the backbone of the innings, because Zimbabwe doesn't have a long tail and hasn't had for a long time. So it's important that the majority of those runs are done by those first six, seven batters.
Yeah, absolutely. And in that last T20, Madavere scoring a half century in quick time as well, 54 off 36. But in to set up that total of 193 for five and the target of 194 for Bangladesh. But in reply, I was impressed by a couple of Bangladeshi batsmen in particular. So Shumo Sharka coming into the team, scoring 68, opening the batting of 49, really kind of set things up. But even then, a quick 525 from Shakib as well. But even then, there was still a bit of work to do. Mamadullah scoring 34 off 28. But still, I think when he got out, there was something like still 20-odd runs left. There was still a bit of work to do. And I think, in times of the past, it's quite conceivable that, Bangladesh would have folded under, facing a steepling run rate. But they didn't. And who I was particularly impressed with was Afif Hussain. Yeah, he didn't score a lot. He wasn't there for a long time. He was only there for five balls. But, sometimes at the end of the T20 chase or when you're setting up a total, coming in for five or six balls is absolutely critical. Being able to put on sort of 15 or 20 runs at the back end of an inning is absolutely vital. That's exactly what he did. But then, even more impressively, the youngster who just come into the team, Shamim Hussain, scoring 31 off 15. Tell us a bit about how you thought he played.
Well, it's the first that I've seen of him. I'll talk a little bit about Afif and I'll come back to him. You're talking about Afif, and sometimes four or five balls are so important at the end of the innings. He ran down and he slapped one of the Zimbabwean seamers. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Chitara over mid-wicket for six, first ball, which just kept the rate at the end of the over to, roughly what they needed. And if he hadn't done that and been so bold at that time, then, they would have just been that little bit further back in terms of the run rate. So, Afif is a guy that I've seen throughout the last few BPLs and the opportunities he's got in T20 cricket. And it's that breeding ground that I'm talking about that's also so important for the Zimbabweans. So, he's a very confident little cricketer. And I see a bright future for him and for Bangladesh. And then Shamim, first time I saw him, I saw the catch when he was a replacement fielder to dismiss Ryan Burl, which was absolutely brilliant. But I think even in the second T20, he got, a few runs in quick time, but certainly shows that he's got a lot of confidence. Small man, but he packs a big punch, hits the ball nicely, likes going over the onside field. And again, that's, a player who you can see has got nice senior players to mix with. Shumo Sharka in the T20 side anyway. Shakib Alhasan, Mamdullah, the captain. Tamim, if it's in the one-day stuff as well. So, look, he looks like he's got a bright future. Part of a really good under-19 Bangladesh team as well. So, I thought to come into the series and make the effect that he did in that last game in particular – just shows a kid who's who's got his head on his shoulders and a bright future.
Indeed, yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think, along with the young wicketkeeper as well, I thought, Nurul Hasan, you know, who also seemed to have, you know, just so much confidence, seemed to be very dynamic in the way that he was playing the game. And dare I say it, a bit of a swagger as well, you know, a bit of confidence bordering on arrogance, which I think is something that, you know, traditionally just hasn't been associated with any Bangladesh players. So, yeah, good signs, I would say, for the future. And also, you know, just good to win a T20I series. Obviously, they've got the T20I World Cup on the horizon in just a few months' time. Bangladesh are going to be involved in the sort of the pre-qualifying round as well. So I think it's vital to for them to have, achieve this series win. Going into that, they've obviously got sort of stiffer challenges, if you would like to say it that way, ahead. They've got hopefully a series against Australia, New Zealand and England in terms of T20I. So lots still to play for in terms of preparation ahead of that World Cup. But like you say, I think there are some encouraging signs.
No, they most definitely are.
Well, yeah, great. I mean, it's always brilliant to have you on, Tino. Thanks for taking time out. I know how busy you are. I know, you know, your broadcasting commitments are not only those that take place in Zimbabwe, but also I know you've broadcasted and commentated an awful lot in Bangladesh. And I know you were telling me a little while ago, you've been to Bangladesh something like, I forget how many times in the last sort of 6 or 7 years. Have you been there almost every year?
I've been there every year since 2015. Actually, since 2014. 2014, I went as a player, and that was the last time I went as a player. But otherwise, yeah, I've been there every year since then. And it's been a wonderful experience. It's been a breeding ground, if I can say, for my career in terms of the BPL that I did there and the opportunity I had to commentate on series that, you know, didn't involve Zimbabwe. So only until recently have I had the opportunity to travel a lot more with the team and commentate when the team is away. But I had some opportunities there as well to commentate on series that did involve them, Bangladesh, Afghanistan, 2019, Sri Lanka to Bangladesh, 2018, 2017, I think. West Indies were there for a full tour in 2018. So, it really has helped me push along in my young career, and I appreciate the opportunities there. But other than that, a wonderful country. Great people. I get the opportunity to work with a whole lot of people, and I've also, because been there so often, I've had the opportunity to travel the country, see different places, commentate in different grounds. So I've had the opportunity to work in Khulna, Sylhet, where I first met you a couple of years ago, of course in Dhaka and Mirpur. Cox's Bazaar, I didn't commentate, I played. Chotogram, so it's been a wonderful opportunity. And I was there recently for the Sri Lanka Super League ODIs at the end of May. So, yeah, long may it continue. I'd love another opportunity to be able to nip across there, and hopefully that opportunity comes again soon.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, what I would say, yeah, it was great meeting you for the first time a few years ago. Like you said, I remember, I think it was at Sylhet Airport departures or incoming terminal at Sylhet Airport where I first kind of met you and started to strike up conversation. And yeah, I think, you know, it's absolutely brilliant that someone like you, with your professionalism, has I feel really elevated the broadcasts that come come out of Bangladesh. So yeah, long may that continue. And I think it's great that, you know, you seem to have kind of fostered a love for the country itself now. And yeah, hopefully that will continue. And I can't wait to meet you over there myself the next time.
Yeah, hopefully that's not too far from here. But yeah, like I said, I mean, it's just, I've learned so much about the country, about the people, work with great people. So it's also taught me a lot in terms of broadcast and the productions that I've worked on. So yeah, it's my second home with regards to cricket and broadcasting. And as I say, I thoroughly enjoy every time I get an opportunity to work there, and I hope another one comes soon.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Tino. I'm sure we could spend hours and hours more talking, but I know you're a busy man. So let's leave it there, and let's hope that, yeah, we have another conversation really soon. But once again, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Tohid, thanks a lot. It's been good on the show. And obviously Bangladesh going back home for the Australia series. We wish them all the best with that as well.
Brilliant. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for watching. Do go on to the sightscreencricketjournal.com website for all the latest news and views about Bangladesh cricket, and also check out the Twitter handle as well. But thanks for now. Goodbye.
Cheers, Tohid. Thanks.